Hello and welcome into the Locked On Wolves podcast. Today on the show, we're going to have Rafael Barlow from NBA Draft Junkies and the host of the Locked On NBA Big Board show on the program to talk about all four Timberwolves draft picks. He was actually in Europe to watch Matteo Spagnuolo last year, so he has some interesting insight there. But we'll talk about all four Wolves draft picks. That's all upcoming on the show. Welcome in. You are Locked On Wolves.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. Today's show is brought to us by BetOnline. BetOnline has us covered this season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. BetOnline, where the game starts. Happy Monday, everybody. Hopefully you had a fantastic weekend. First of all, thank you for making Locked On Wolves your first listen each and every day and first listen of the week. Of course, this show is free and available everywhere, including YouTube, as well as all of your favorite audio platforms from Apple to Google, Spotify, to our friends at Audacy, A-U-D-A-C-Y. You can also follow this show on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves and at B-Beacon, and that's with two B's, two E's, C-K-E-N. All right, as mentioned, we're going to get to Rafael Barlow, who, of course, is the host of the fantastic Locked On NBA Big Board show. He also is the founder of NBA Draft Junkies. We had a long conversation with him, so I want to get to that. He has some interesting perspectives on all four Timberwolves draftees, so we're going to talk about all of them here. I want to start by just a couple of, mentioning a couple of notes. The Wolves are busy filling their summer league roster, filling their Exhibit 10 contract slots. They have reportedly agreed to add Kevon Harris, who is with the Raptors G League affiliate, to their summer league roster. We'll talk more about him later this week. Likewise for Philip Wheeler, who is a former high schooler in New Jersey, played briefly in the G League showcase, but played played in the Puerto Rican League last year. Will be on the Puerto Rican national team upcoming in international competition. So I want to break down those guys as players here a little bit more later this week. So we'll do that here as we gear up. Obviously, free agency begins, this weekend, right? And then summer league begins next week. And so, or the end of next week, I guess. So that's, we're going to talk about all that stuff, free agency, summer league. In the meantime, I want to finish breaking down the draft and then look at some of the players you'll see in summer league and potentially see on the roster. Exhibit 10 guys a lot of times are in training camp and go play in the G League. So we're going to break down all that here the rest of this week. Real quickly, all four Timberwolves draftees are going to be talked about in the conversation with myself and Rafael here in just about 2 minutes. In terms of each of those four guys, you look at a few different breakdowns of you know, kind of how they went about doing this draft, right? They traded back from 19 for 22 and 29 to get Kessler at 22. The questions that I'm going to talk to Rafael about is can the Wolves play multiple pick and roll coverages there? Some reporting by John Krasinski at The Athletic. We heard generally, not just from John, but generally that the Wolves really liked Kessler in workouts in Minneapolis. Rafael's going to tell us a little bit later. He was surprised that Kessler went as high as he did. Reportedly though, in these workouts, and John Krasinski reported this at The Athletic after the draft, he shot the ball extremely well in the workout with the Wolves. He showed a soft shooting touch that he didn't always show in college. He shot, what, a couple dozen jumpers total at Auburn last season. And so we know the Wolves want to play big. We know Chris Finch wants to play big lineups. We know Tim Connelly wants to play big lineups. And if Kessler can stretch the floor at all, that's gravy, right? If he plays, if you could have a legit 7-footer back up Towns and play 10, 12, 14 minutes a game as a backup, maybe play 4, 5, 6 minutes next to Towns, 8 minutes next to Towns, sliding Towns to the four. And you could start to mix in some of those lineups, mix up your pick and roll coverages, add some shot protection, have some added insurance when and if Karl-Anthony Towns gets into more foul trouble, hopefully not as much as he did last year. Those are all the things that Kessler can provide. But I thought that nugget from Krasinski about him shooting the ball specifically well, and that add some color to what Rafael's going to talk about here in a minute regarding where he thought Kessler would actually get drafted. Wendell Moore will, again, a lot more on him coming up, but given the combination of where they got him in the draft, could he be have an immediate impact as a two-way player? So I'm going to talk about that with Rafael. He's another player that John Krasinski in his write-up talked a little bit about. Minette we're going to talk about as well. And then really interesting thoughts from Rafael Barlow on Matteo Spagnuolo, And I pronounced his last name wrong last week, so I apologize for that. Spaniolo is how you say his last name. Rafael actually spent last season in Europe and scouted him in person, mentions a YouTube video he has where he followed Spaniolo for an entire game. So when I'm done recording this, I'm going to go watch that to watch not just the highlight cut-ups, right? But how did Spaniolo play when he passed the ball to guys who missed shots? How did he play off the ball on both ends of the floor, offensively and defensively? Now, Spaniolo is likely going to spend the year in Europe. We're not going to see him in a Timberwolves uniform for at least 12 months. Well, 12, 14, 16 months, whatever, till next fall, most likely. But Rafael provides some really interesting perspective on Spaniolo specifically. So we're going to get to that conversation now. Again, we talked about all four draftees. So it's a wide-ranging conversation, and he provides some great insight. So let's do that here next. First, let's talk about our title sponsors from today's show. And that, of course, is BetOnline. BetOnline.net is your number one source for all your betting needs and sports info. You can find all the latest sports developments, league reviews, and news, including the NHL Stanley Cup Finals, which are ongoing currently, and Major League Baseball, of course, almost at midseason there. BetOnline is your continued source for all your sport wagering information, including live betting, esports, and scores. You can live bet baseball. You can live bet for what's left of the Stanley Cup Finals. Of course, BetOnline.net remains the best spot for all your sports scores, podcasts, and news this season. BetOnline.net is the fastest and easiest way to check in on all your favorite sports and events, including MMA, boxing, golf. We're almost to football season, believe it or not. We're like 6-7 weeks away from preseason football. And yes, you can bet on preseason NFL action, college football, college basketball, once we get to the fall, NBA, of course. You can head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends and action. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, without further ado, let's go ahead and get to our friend Rafael Barlow. Here's my conversation with Rafael. All right, very excited to be joined by Rafael Barlow, the host of the Locked On NBA Big Board show and the founder of NBA Draft Junkies. Appreciate you coming on, Rafael. I want to talk a little bit about the Timberwolves draft picks this last week. Obviously, they came away with four players. They did a lot of trading back and forth in the draft. They traded down from 19 to 22 and 29, then back up to get 26. I want to start by talking about their first round selections. Of course, Walker Kessler picked at number 22. What do Timberwolves fans need to know about Walker Kessler? Because on the surface, if you're not a big college basketball fan, you know, you see that they drafted a 7-footer. Well, Karl Anthony Towns is also effectively a 5, or mostly plays the 5, is effectively a 7-footer, I should say. What do we need to know about Walker Kessler and what that fit could look like with the Timberwolves?
Well, he's an elite shot blocker, first and foremost. If I'm not mistaken, he had a historic season as far as blocks. And I think the last person that had as many blocks as him was like Hassan Whiteside his freshman year. So he's just I think it's like over 4 blocks a game or something like that.
He's like a 19% block rate, I think.
Yeah, it's something crazy. And it's almost to the point like why are teams even challenging him? And still, despite the fact that teams were trying to game plan against him, he had multiple games where he had over 10 blocks. So that's what you're going to get from him. I do think that there is some potential on the offensive end of the floor. Maybe, I mean, not a guy that you're just going to dump the ball to and block and say, go get us one. But I do think that there is some potential for him to be more than just a shot blocker and a rebounder. As far as the fit, it's kind of interesting because Cleveland played jumbo lineups this year and they had some success. Mm-hmm. And before injuries came at the end of the season, they were a playoff team. And I've heard some scouts say that they think teams are going to start back playing big, going with these jumbo lineups. And they mentioned that the Celtics often played Williams and Horford together. And Golden State sometimes played Green and Looney together as opposed to always going small. So he thinks that the NBA could be trending back that way, and at least for a few minutes per game. So I think with Towns' ability to knock down shots, it gives you the option of playing him at the 4. But it'd be interesting how it works as far as like pick and roll defense. But
yeah,
I somewhat get the fit.
So that was actually going to be my next question is in pick and roll game, because everything that I've read about it and what I've watched from Kessler at Auburn is that he was a really good drop coverage defender in pick and roll. And the Timberwolves used to run that. Karl Anthony Towns is really bad in drop coverage. So they basically stopped using drop coverage defensively last year. They mixed it in a little towards the end of the season. But Is he going to be quick enough laterally? Is he going to, do you think he'll be able to, at the NBA level, play kind of a high wall, kind of a blitzy and pick and roll coverage? The Wolves played a ton of that last year and it worked for Towns. My concern with, and there's always the option of if Kessler's the backup, then you play drop when he's in the game and you play something else when Towns is in the game, but they're going to play together and you want to mix coverages. Is he going to be able to guard at all? Not necessarily switching, but any sort of like other pick and roll coverage besides drop?
You know, that's the million-dollar question. You know, I don't really have the answer to that. I think that's, if there was one concern, that would be the concern.
Okay.
I know a lot of times people didn't even have him as a first-round pick. And starting maybe like a week or two ago, you started to see him trend back up to the first round. I didn't think he would go as high as he went. But I guess maybe Minnesota feels like he can play in some different coverages. Now, I don't know if they'll start together, but I do think there will be times where you see them on the floor at the same time. But I mean, I think if he's your backup center and he can give you 10 to 15 minutes per game and that unit, you know, defensively is locking down, then I think it's worth the first round.
Yeah. And I talked about on the show, I didn't really want the Wolves to pick a center in the first round because my thought is exactly what you said. He plays 10, 12, maybe 15 minutes a game as Towns' backup. And then you maybe mix in a few minutes here and there with, you know, you steal some minutes with the two of them on the floor together to help, you know, get, they struggled rebounding the ball last year. But I have concerns about asset management and how much value you're getting out of a first round pick if he's only going to play max 20 minutes a game. But I mean, he's a late first round pick. So there's also, I don't know how much upside there really is there. I think, you know, it depends on if he can expand his offensive game at all. The other first round pick is Wendell Moore Jr. from Duke. The Timberwolves actually traded, they acquired pick 29, then traded back up. They added a couple of future second rounders to the 29th pick to move up to 26 to take Wendell Moore. And the word is actually that they wanted to take him at 19, but realized, hey, this is, we could trade back and pick up an asset. They did that. Picked Kessler at 22, traded back up to 26 to get Moore because they were worried he'd go before 29. My assessment of Moore, as not a draft expert, but somebody who studied up on this draft to watch a little bit of Wendell Moore, is it feels like he's more of a high floor, lower ceiling type of a guy who maybe right away isn't quite a rotation guy, but he probably has something of a, like a, you know, a fringe, maybe not fringe rotation, like a solid bench guy type of a most likely outcome. What's your take on Wendell Moore as a prospect?
I think Wendell Moore is interesting to evaluate. And like you said, like high, like, all right, for example, a lot of people don't think Wendell Moore has like high upside and potential. You kind of see him as a plug and play guy. And I disagree with that simply because he's like this rare 20-year-old college junior. He has 3 years of experience, and he went into college super early. There are freshmen that were in this class that may only be a few months younger than him. So it's like he chose to develop in college as opposed to the NBA. And so I think, like, let's say he were a freshman. He was held back or, you know, reclassified back a few years ago, and he was only a sophomore, and he played the same way. People would say, oh, this is a high upside guy.
Yeah.
But just because he has 3 years of experience, and he was highly touted coming out of school. His freshman year was so-so, and sophomore year got better, but he really took off as a junior. And, you know, he was considered to be a one-and-done guy. But just because he stayed 3 years, I think people kind of assume that he's more closer to his prime than he really is. But he's only 20. I don't even know if he'll – I mean, I'm sure he'll turn 21. But you get, like, this – weird combination of youth and upside with 3 years of college experience. Mm-hmm. And so I think that benefits the Wolves. And the biggest knock on him earlier in his career was he couldn't shoot. He improved to 40% shooter. He fills out the stat sheet. So I think that he has a lot more potential than people are giving him credit for.
Yeah, it's interesting. Watching him defensively, he reminds me a little bit of another Timberwolves pick from this range in the draft, I guess maybe a little earlier, but from several years ago, Josh Okogie, at least in the way that Wendell Moore defends. Obviously, the offensive upside is greater. If, like you said, 40%+ on threes his junior year at Duke, but it seems like he's a tenacious defender, very switchable, versatile, big wingspan type of a guy. Another comp that I'd seen somebody throw out there, and maybe this is a, maybe not best case scenario, but better case scenario, is like a Josh Richardson type. I don't know if the offensive upside is as good as people thought Richardson's was a couple of years ago, but that type of a switchable wing defender that can guard multiple positions and hopefully also develop into a true 3-and-D guy if that shot, if that 40% is legit. And like you said, he wasn't great his first 2 years, but if that's legit, then, I mean, he could be more of a plug-and-play 3-and-D player for a rotation.
Yeah, and a secondary playmaker. I mean, he rebounded. I think he averaged about 4 or 5 assists per game. Filled out the stat sheet. Just a glue guy, a weapon that, you know, maybe in a pinch he can be, you know, he can initiate your offense. You can actually put him on the floor with, let's say it's, I don't know, like with Pat Bev. Mm-hmm. And you maybe you don't want Pat Bev initiating the offense. He can be a pick and roll guy. So I think it's a good fit. I think he's one of those players that, if he goes to like a playoff team, he's going to look better than he would if he went to, you know, one of these rebuilding teams where they're not really playing with a lot of structure. They're just out there hooping. Yeah. You guys are just playing for like a contract. But I think his real value is as a connector on a good team. So I think, like I said, I think his upside is a lot better than what people are talking about.
Okay. Yeah, and I think with the Wolves roster, he fits right in as already probably a fringe rotation type guy. Maybe he takes the Torian Prince role and he's kind of your ninth guy who some games he doesn't play, but other games he's playing heavier minutes depending on matchups and things like that. And the Wolves needed, you know, in addition to shot blocking and rebounding, they needed additional perimeter defenders and three-point shooters, and he checks both those boxes. All right, back to Rafael's perspective, and especially in the second round, and unique perspective on Matteo Spagnuolo here in just a moment. First, let's talk about Rock Auto. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all the parts you need. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the person behind the counter orders the parts on their computer, choosing the only brand their warehouse happens to carry? You have a computer with access to rockauto.com both at home and in your pocket. You can save time and money when using Rock Auto. Why would you spend 30, 50, even 100% more for the same parts from a chain store or a car dealership? Of course, Rock Auto is a family business, and they've been serving do-it-yourselfers now for over 20 years. Their prices are reliably low for every customer. They have everything you could possibly need, from brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil to even new carpet. You can explore their easy-to-use website today to find the solution for your auto part needs. Go to rockauto.com right now. See all the parts available for your car or truck right locked on in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. I want to talk a little bit about the second round picks. Surely at least one of them won't be on the team this year, will likely be stashed overseas, and the other may end up, we don't know this yet, but could be a two-way contract candidate. So we'll start there. Josh Minot from Memphis, 6'8", 6'11", wingspan. He's somebody who I saw a lot of folks, just in general, not just Timberwolves people, saying like, hey, this is a second round target. He's got, you know, some of the best athleticism in the draft, the best combination of size and athleticism, but played sparingly in college in his one season. I believe it was just one season at Memphis. Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So athleticism's off the charts. That's really all we know about him, other than he didn't do much offensively. What's your take on Minot? And it seems like, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like a pretty good swing that to take in the 40s in the second round.
Yeah, it's just, he's like one of the perfect examples of how the draft is so different than it was like when I was growing up. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember when you drafted a guy, you felt like he was ready to come in and contribute, even in the second round. Now it's just all about potential over production. And it's just weird to me that you see guys that didn't start for their college team, didn't play a lot of minutes, and they're getting drafted because of their physical traits. I mean, we saw Peyton Watson, who averaged 3 points per game, end up as the 30th pick in the draft. So with Minot, on one hand, I get it. I mean, he didn't play a lot of minutes. He is athletic. He does have the tools that teams look for as far as like the long arms and the defensive versatility. I spoke to one of his coaches a few months back, and he felt like his highest upside or best case scenario would be like a Mikal Bridges type defender. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's all defensive team defender.
Yeah.
But it's just whether or not he has the offense that will allow him to stay on the floor and be able to play that type of minutes. Because I think in today's NBA, you know, if you're not shooting the ball or you're not a threat on offense, it doesn't matter how great you are on defense. I don't think the days of Andre Roberson's are over. But he's a good passer. You know, like if you really watch his film, you see that he's a good passer. He's like a – he has the body of a wing, but he has the game of like your blue collar 4 or 5. All his production is going to come from crashing the offensive glass, running in transition, just hustle and energy plays. Now, if you can get some corner threes out of that with his defense with potential, then you could end up with, like, I mean, top 15, top 20 value out of him. So it's just going to depend on the Wolves' developmental program.
Yeah, he actually my comp for him after watching a little bit of his tape from last year is he reminds me a little bit of like you said, maybe more of a wing version of Jared Vanderbilt to I guess use another Timberwolves comp in that he can't shoot. He's a better passer certainly than Vanderbilt because he's more of a wing and the rebound rate isn't what Vando's was in college either. But both played sparingly in college. Both were more projection type picks and he would be a no scoring option who could be potentially a better defender because I think he'll be a little bit more quick laterally than Vando is. But there's some similarity there in terms of role where you're just going to put him on the floor and let him wreak havoc. The steal and block rates were insane for him in, again, limited playing time, but gets in passing lanes. Like you said, it seems to be, for somebody that didn't play a lot, somewhat of a high IQ type guy in terms of getting into passing lanes and also being able to pass the ball himself offensively, especially when teams know he's not going to shoot jumpers or at least not shoot them effectively. He's still able to pass the ball pretty effectively too.
You know, it's interesting. I live in Dallas, and I remember watching Vanderbilt in high school. He was like a point forward, and it's weird that, you know, he's accepted, which I think is credit to him, he's accepted the role that he has now. I think that he does have a lot more skills than he's been able to showcase.
And he does handle the ball a little bit. He can in the open floor. It's more I mean, they don't ever ask him to do it, but he'll occasionally rip down a rebound and just go in the open floor. And it's, he doesn't have great hands, I guess. So like, he's not great in pick and roll game in that regard. They play him in the dunker's spot a lot, which I'm sure is what Minot's role is going to be early in the NBA when he eventually gets on the floor. But that's why I say, feels like he could be maybe signing a two-way deal this year or something like that, where obviously he's not a rotation guy yet, but Vando's got a year left on his deal. Actually, I think 2 years left. He just signed the extension before last year. So maybe in a couple of years, Minot takes that type of a role where he's your energy, you know, four on the floor. He could maybe play small ball five, guard some threes, that sort of a thing.
Yeah, and I think he's more of a natural for that role than Vanderbilt, because Vanderbilt was very skilled in high school. Mm-hmm. And I just think, like, he's accepted of, this is the role I'm going to have to play to stick. And, you know, obviously play in the NBA. Which there are a lot of guys that don't accept. They have a hard time accepting a reduced role, and they feel like they can do so much more. But I think Minot is definitely more so of a natural to play the Vanderbilt role than Vanderbilt is actually playing.
Interesting. Okay. Well, let's close by talking about the international man of mystery that probably a lot of Timberwolves fans don't know much about. Mateo Spagnuolo was the Timberwolves, actually their only selection they made at their own pick. They came into the draft with five total selections. They made four selections, and only one of them was where they had a pick initially, and that was number 50 in the second round. Spagnuolo, that's right around where a lot of boards had him, and he kind of had a breakout year, is my understanding, overseas. What can you tell Timberwolves fans about Spagnuolo?
I like him a lot. I hope he gets the opportunity to play. He's very young. Like I was just watching him around this time last year playing in an under-18 tournament for Real Madrid, Real Madrid is a powerhouse in Europe. That's, you know, Luka Doncic played. They have his rights, but he is Italian, so he played his first professional season in Italy. And I just so happened to be at, I think, his biggest breakout game of the year, and they played Team Virtus Bologna, which won the Euro Cup, which finished second in the Italian league, and they have quite a few former NBA players on the team. And he was the best player on the court that night. And coming into the season, I knew he was like this very confident scorer, a guy that played a little bit different than Europeans, because most Europeans play like with a lot of structure. He has a little bit of flash and flair to his game. I guess, you know, the Wolves have another, Balmero is Barcelona, but he is creative type, you know, freelancer, and Spagnuolo, he can score. And so, the one knock I had on him was, could he run a team? Is he a point guard? And he made tremendous strides this year as a passer, been able to, you know, drive and kick, make reads, very poised. I mean, he looks like a kid, baby face. I was just at the combine with him, and, you know, I stayed in contact with him throughout the season and spoke to him a lot during the combine because, you know, he's an international kid. So there's like no media or any press around him, but just very quiet. Like, I mean, he looks like he's 15, 16 years old, but he has a confidence to him. I think there is some potential for him to be an NBA player. It's just going to be interesting because he could be faced in a situation to where he'll have to decide if does he want to, you know, do like a two-way or play in the G League, play over here, or have a, you know, a bigger role playing professional in Europe. So I haven't talked to him since the draft, but I do think he has potential to be an NBA player.
Yeah, Tim Connolly, the Timberwolves president of Basketball Ops, said he was actually the only player he could talk about in the post-draft press conference because everybody else was still in no man's land with the trades pending. But he said that Spagnuolo would almost certainly spend next year overseas still. He's only, like you said, he's only 19. 6'5", 6'8", wingspan. My take on just, you know, again, watching limited footage of him, read a couple articles about him. It sounds like he's, like you said, not maybe not purely a point guard, but could be a secondary playmaker type, can create his own shot. That's what I kept noticing was he could get his own shot off from almost anywhere. Difficult shots. It seems like sometimes shot selection was an issue, but again, he's 19.
Yeah.
But he still could make tough shots. So as long as he can rein that in, keep developing the secondary playmaker stuff and be competitive enough defensively, it seems like he should be a good enough athlete. And you know, can he lock in defensively? Can he continue to develop in terms of shot selection and being a playmaker? What does that role look like in 2-3 years for the Timberwolves? Who knows? I mean, maybe it is kind of that bench, you know, almost, well, I don't know. They don't really have somebody in that specific role now, but some, almost like a Jalen Noel type role where he could come in and score off the bench, can also run the offense in a pinch. You run some sets for him to handle and pick and roll, even if he's not your primary point guard. That type of a role seems like it could fit him in a couple of years.
Yeah, but I actually think that he can be a long-term point guard.
Okay.
I really do. So if you would have asked me this a year ago at this time, I would have said, okay, I think he's more so of a combo. Mm-hmm. But like I said, he made great strides playing point this year. I have a video on my YouTube channel on NBA Draft Junkies where I actually went to his game and I followed him around with the camera the entire game. And it just literally showed almost every possession, showed the times where he drove to the basket, made the right read, maybe his teammates missed it. And it was actually fun doing it. I wish I could have did it more.
Yeah.
But I'm high on him. Obviously, I went to Bologna, Italy, to go watch him play.
Yeah.
So I've been high on him for a while. For me, it's just interesting to see like if he stays with his team in Italy or he ends up playing for Real Madrid next year. But again, I think he's an NBA player.
Okay, that's fascinating. That's exactly why we have you on the show, is to get that perspective. Somebody that's seen him in person and can add that, you know, that you're not going to see if you just watch cutups on YouTube or whatever. You're not going to get that insight. So I appreciate that. Anything else about the Timberwolves draft overall? It was kind of one of those, like, everybody talked about, you know, the Pistons draft and some teams that made some noise, but the Wolves made 4 picks, but it wasn't really talked about because it was nothing really surprising or out of the ordinary. And I don't know. They made 4 trades, but it was just kind of moving back and forth. They ended up trading out three second rounders, getting back 2 second rounders. To put you on the spot, of the 4 guys they drafted, who do you think has the most immediate impact in the NBA, and who do you think has the best long-term, prognosis at the NBA level?
I'd probably go with Wendell Moore. But then again, you know, I mean, I always want to call him Walker Kessler. Kessler Walker. Because the order always messes me up. He's only played one real year of college basketball.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that was a dominant year. And it just depends on if his offense translates. Like, I watched some of his high school film, and I thought that he was – I mean, I knew he's going to be a good shot blocker, but I thought he was going to be more productive on the offensive end and a good shot blocker. But he's been like a dynamite shot blocker and so-so on offense. So I think if he can, like, develop the shooting, the touch around the rim, then maybe him. Maybe he can end up being, you know, a 10-year player. I think maybe more right now. But I feel like the Wolves draft isn't really talked about because they added depth. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're a playoff team, and people are just more excited about when you are a bad team and you add guys that are going to start. And so I think with Minnesota, by them adding depth, I think they got better with this draft. And then I expect Minot to spend the year with Iowa. And if he can develop any offense, I mean, you could say in 5 years, this could be one of the top 5, you know, draft classes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's a weird position for the Timberwolves to be in. Timberwolves fans aren't used to their drafts being depth drafts. They're used to, you know, picking Anthony Edwards or Carl Anthony Towns number one or whatever. So, yeah, absolutely. Well, appreciate you coming on, Raphael. Why don't you tell listeners where they can find you and all your work?
yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Barlow500. And then I am the host of the Locked On NBA Big Board podcast, which is your daily NBA draft podcast. And, you know, so it's a lot to talk about the NBA draft, especially in September. It's going to be a little bit tough talking about, you know, there's no basketball going on. So, but then I run the NBABigBoard.com website, which was Chad Ford's newsletter. I took over for Chad when he retired back in April. And so far, it's been really good. I mean, the feedback has been good. I've kind of had like my own little flavor to it. But I mean, it's something I enjoy. It's exclusive content. So it is behind the paywall. It's $7 a month. And that's where you can find like different articles. And this year, I'll have more in-depth articles on like some of the international prospects, which usually doesn't benefit me until at this time when the team's like, who do we just draft?
Yeah, exactly.
We don't know anything about them. So, but yeah, that's where you can find me at.
Awesome. Appreciate it, Raphael. Thanks for coming on. And everybody go check out his stuff. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, that'll do it for today's show. My thanks again to Raphael Barlow for coming on the show and talking Wolves draft. Of course, the rest of this week, we're going to look at players that we know have signed or have reportedly signed, I should say, to the Timberwolves Summer League Team Exhibit 10 contracts. Also, free agency rumors, trade rumors, all that stuff that's happening throughout this week as everybody gears up for free agency and the rest of the offseason. Of course, we're still daily, even post-draft now, for at least the next several weeks here through Summer League and through the meat of free agency. So be sure you're following and subscribe to this show. And thank you to those of you that do make Locked On Wolves your first listen each and every day. Of course, you can find this show everywhere, YouTube, Apple, Google, Spotify, Odyssey, anywhere you like to listen to podcasts. You can find it. If you listen on Apple, please help us out with a review on YouTube. Please subscribe to the channel, like the video, comment, all that good stuff. It's greatly appreciated. Reminder, you can also follow on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. And at B Beacon with two B's, two E's, C-K-E-N. Of course, the Locked On Wolves podcast is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Of course, the Locked On Network is your local experts on all the biggest stories. And of course, lots to talk about throughout the rest of the week related to the offseason, as mentioned. A reminder, you can make your second listen to the Locked On NBA show. For your second listen, get up to date on the latest news and rumors in the NBA in just 30 minutes every day with Locked On NBA. Locked On NBA is your daily NBA update in just 30 minutes or less. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.